Good morning, everybody. A few of our members are away at the conference, as was mentioned earlier, in Columbia, South Carolina. Sherry and I had a chance to be there for Friday night and Saturday morning. I got to hear Sam Lang speak on the topic of Jesus, the name that is above every name, and then heard Brother Mark Hodge, who's now at the Charleston Church, leading the Charleston Church, speak on the subject of Jesus, our high priest, going back to Hebrews and talking about looking at some of the Old Testament priesthood and how that relates to Jesus, and some really interesting things there. It's kind of similar to what we've been doing here in this class. And then heard our own Ben Barnett speak on the subject of to live as Christ. And just a very Jesus-centered time. Great to see some great friends back there. Sherry and I got to eat lunch with a couple of sisters that we knew back from way long ago in Charlotte that had actually as college students had lived with us for a year or so, or 6 months. I think a different length of time for each one. But at any rate, we had a great time there and got back. So we're here. But there's some of our brothers and sisters are still there. So at any rate, what we've been doing here in Central Gwinnett, we've been having a Sunday school class at 9 o'clock in the morning. Those of you who didn't get the announcement this morning got here plenty early. For this particular week, because of people being out of town, we moved the Bible class to the sermon time slot. So that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be talking about, this is our fourth class in the series on the Old Testament. What we're doing is basically going through the Old Testament, teaching the text. And in doing so, we're trying to relate when we're going through the books of the history of the Old Testament. As we reach a particular point, we'll go look at other passages like prophecies or like New Testament where they discuss the Old Testament events in the New Testament. We'll go and let that shed some additional light on what happened and what it means for us. So we're trying to tie the prophets and the New Testament explanations, enlightenment, to the Old Testament, so it all connects together. Build a framework for understanding the Bible correctly. That's what we're trying to do. To set the stage for those of you who haven't been here before, I know we've got a few first-time visitors here, first-time people for this class. Where we've been, of course, we started in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We talked about a creation and the fact that that's what makes the rest of the scriptures relevant, is the fact that God created it. Yeah, God made us. God made everything. He owns it. He gets to say what we ought to be and what we ought to do, and He's going to control what we're going to become and what's going to happen to us. So God is sovereign. God created the heavens and the earth. We talked about Adam and Eve being created. We talked about the fall, the sin in the Garden of Eden. Talked about Adam and about Cain and Abel, the first two sons of Adam and Eve, and how Cain killed Abel because he was jealous because Abel gave a better sacrifice. Then we talked about the descendants of the third son of Cain and Abel was Seth, and talked about his descendants and Cain's descendants. We talked about the flood. God told Noah to build an ark, and he decided he's going to destroy the world because they were all evil. So God did that. Noah spent almost 100 years building that ark. Loaded it up with all the animals as God commanded, and God sent the rain, and the world was destroyed except for those who lived on that ark. And then after the ark, we talked about the Tower of Babel, one of the next things that happened, where God decided He was going to confuse the languages of people, because with all the cooperation and being united and doing some things that were not honoring God, that was a destructive thing, actually. And so God decided He was going to confuse the languages so that wouldn't continue to happen, to limit the evil man could do, basically. We talked then about Abraham, originally named Abram. And this is what we talked about last week. Abraham, the father of the faithful, a very key figure in the Bible, and talked about, in particular, the promise God made to Abraham that through his seed all the world would be blessed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And about the promise of giving them the promised land, the land of Canaan, all that land where all the Canaanites, descendants of Ham, descendants of Noah, everybody's a descendant of Noah, but the Canaanites who lived in that area, they were he was going to give them their land. But that it was, so he promised that to Abraham. Abraham offered his son at God's command as a sacrifice. God stopped him before He actually killed him, and God was so moved by that act. He says, I surely will bless you. Your descendants will be greater than, you know, more numerous than the stars in the sky, and I will surely bless you because you've done this. And it talks about the fact that Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness when God made those promises. So we talked about the fact that in Romans, that promise applies to us too. That pretty much brings us to where we are. That was our first three classes in 5 minutes. And where we are now, this week we're talking about Abraham's son Isaac and his two sons Jacob and Esau. And basically what we're going to do today, we're going to talk about how Jacob, being the younger son, was the one that received the promise. The promise is going to be delivered through Jacob, even though he was not the firstborn. And we're going to follow the Esau through the Bible, what the Bible has to say about his descendants, and see how what God said about him really came true. We're going to talk about Jacob and basically how God delivered the promise through Jacob. So in Genesis chapter 25, this is the things we're talking about today come from basically chapter 25 through 35 of Genesis. In Genesis 25, we'll start in verse 19. It says, this is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean from Padam Aram, and sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." Which is sort of the opposite of what was sort of the expected thing, you know, that the older would be the powerful, the favored son, the firstborn. He would receive the rights of a firstborn in the inheritance. But yet here it was the reverse, that the younger would be over the older. So verse 24 says, when the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first that came out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau, which means hairy. He was incidentally also called Edom, which means red. Okay, so we had Esau and Edom basically being synonymous for the same person, the firstborn son of Isaac. Verse 26, after this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob, which means grasping the heel, which figuratively means the deceiver. And we'll find out that that was a very apt name for Jacob. Okay. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. Okay. So we have these the first two sons, and immediately what we have following this is a familiar passage where Esau loses his birthright. This is after they grew up, verse 27. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man, staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, "Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished." That is why he's also called Edom. Jacob replied, "First, sell me your birthright." "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is the birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. Okay, he despised his birthright. I mean, it doesn't mean that he obviously later regretted deeply having what he had done, but he couldn't get it back. But so Esau, the firstborn, loses his rights to Jacob. Okay, we'll read a passage later in the New Testament talking about the folly of that and admonishing us not to do things like that. Chapter 26, we have the promise of God repeated to Isaac. Basically what we're going to do, I'm not going to read all of this because if I do, then you'll get bored and it'll take too long. I only have about an hour and a half of battery here, so you don't have to worry about me going longer than that. So we're not going to read everything. But basically, the promise repeated that God was going to bless him, Isaac. The promise to Abraham was going to be delivered through Isaac. He says in verse 4, chapter 26, verse 4, he says, "I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and will give them all these lands, and through your offspring all the earth will be blessed, because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, my decrees, and my laws. Okay. Now, I don't know if that sounds peculiar or interesting to you in any particular way, but think about where we are in history now. I sort of gave you the Cliff's notes on how we got here. Didn't hear anything about Moses yet, have you? Hadn't heard anything about the law, Mount Sinai. Okay. Obviously, there were some commands, laws, and decrees. There were some requirements that God had given to Abraham. Right? We don't have them all spelled out for us. But as we point out in past classes, even Cain and Abel were making sacrifices to God. One of those sacrifices was according to God's will, and one of them was inadequate, okay, in some way. All right, so there were requirements for sacrifice, even for Cain and Abel. We saw last week where Abraham gave a tenth of his plunder from the war to Melchizedek, the priest, the high priest of God. Okay, so there was sacrifice, there was giving to God. We talked about after the flood that there was a covenant that included the rainbow, but there was also some requirements about what they could and couldn't eat and about not committing murder. And there may have been other things, we don't know, but that much has been given to us. So here we have Abraham also. There was a law, there were some requirements God had placed on people from all time and that preceded the law of Moses. And they were, and he says that because Abraham obeyed him, okay, and not because Abraham was perfect. We saw situations where Abraham didn't do quite right, and yet God blessed him because of his faith and because of his faithful obedience. So, you know, you see there's a faith and there's an obedience part to Abraham. But here in verse 26, it repeats that he's not blessing Isaac because Isaac's great, not because Isaac's necessarily doing everything right. He's blessing Isaac because of the promise he made to Abraham. Okay, and that promise isn't going to change. Even, you know, God was going to take care of Isaac. So it goes on in chapter 26, verses 6 and following, we have another interesting situation. If you recall, Abraham, a couple of times, went into a region, once into Egypt and once into the land of Abimelech, and basically told them that Sarah was his sister because she was beautiful and he was afraid they were going to kill him so they could get his wife. So he did that twice. Well, here we have Isaac doing the same thing. And we don't know for sure if this is the same Abimelech. Abimelech might just be a title, kind of like Pharaoh, that was passed on to the next generation. Or it might have been the same guy. It could conceivably have been the same guy. But at any rate, you know, it's kind of interesting to imagine if it was, you know. It says, I've seen your father do this before. I've seen this. You know, I know how this comes out. So he didn't touch his wife, and he found out, and he, you know, said, why'd you do this to me? And sent him on his way with his wife. So in chapter 26, let's look in verse 34. Here we have an interesting thing. We're going to follow this through for a little bit, talking about the Esau's Hittite wives. Verse 34, 26:34. When Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and also Basemath, daughter of Elon, the Hittite. They were a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. So here we have Esau marrying these two Hittite women. The Hittites were descendants of Canaan, Canaan being descendant of Ham, descendant of Noah, the son that Noah cursed. Okay, and here we have these people, these Canaanites, that eventually were the people that were going to be driven out and completely destroyed when God gave their land to the Israelites. But we have Esau marrying their descendants. And that was a source of great... Yeah, it says a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Okay, yeah, the idea of marrying people that do not honor God, okay, it's a serious thing. He talks about I'm gonna just highlight here a few places. You can take these down as notes. I guess you have the survey notes up there. You can take these down or you can turn to them if you like. But in Genesis 24 verses 3 and 4, I'm just going to read them to you. It says. This is Abraham talking to one of his servants. He says, I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I am living, but will go to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son Isaac. He wanted a wife for his son Isaac out of people that he knew who had a, you know, an honoring, who were honoring God. In chapter 27, verse 46, we have Rebekah talking to Isaac about Esau's wives. He says, "Then Rebekah said to Isaac, 'I am disgusted with living because of these Hittite women. If Jacob takes a wife from among the people of this land, from the Hittite women like these, my life will not be worth living.'" Okay. So Rebekah obviously felt pretty strongly about this issue. Okay. In chapter 28, verse 1, "So Isaac called for Jacob and blessed him and commanded him, 'Do not marry a Canaanite woman. Go at once to Padam Aram, to the house of your mother's father, Bethuel. Take a wife for yourself there from among the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother.'" So here we have Isaac giving instructions to Jacob. Don't be marrying the Canaanite women. Okay. In chapter 28, verses 6 through 9, we have Esau deciding, "Well, I realize my parents don't like the fact that I married these Hittite women, so I'll marry some women that are descendants of Abraham too." Okay. So he tried to make amends by adding some other wives. Okay. But he still had the Hittite women as wives. There's quite a few other passages throughout the scriptures that basically talk about this subject, and I'm not going to turn to all these, but you can take down the references. We talked about in Genesis 6:2 where the sons of men married sons of God married the daughters of men as being a potential an intermarriage situation. 1 Kings 11 verses 1-13 we hear about Solomon. Solomon married many foreign women, and he was led astray by their idolatry. Okay, so at the end of his life, he didn't follow God wholeheartedly as his father had, as David had. In Ezra chapters 9 and 10, we have the repentance after the return from captivity, because Judah and Benjamin, the Levites, had intermarried with the people that were not Israelites. Okay. In 1 Corinthians 7, verse 39, speaking of Christians, it says that a Christian whose spouse dies can remarry, but he must belong to the Lord. So there's a picture that goes from end to end of the scriptures talking about the importance of marrying Christians or marrying believers in God, the people that honor God. And that's very clear. So I wanted to just kind of trace that through, and you can go back and study those passages on your own. So, but meanwhile, we're talking about Jacob and Esau and Isaac. So we're back in Genesis chapter 27. And here's where Jacob has stolen Esau's birthright. Now he's going to steal his blessing. It was traditional at the end of the life that the father would give a blessing to the sons. And there was a special blessing for the firstborn son. And it appears even that these blessings were like, had the force of God, whether God inspired them or God honored them and executed the, or carried out the blessings. It seems that they had the authority of God. He says, and what happened here is Rebekah decides that she wants Jacob to get the blessing rather than Esau. And so Isaac sends, Esau out in the field. He's going to give his firstborn son the firstborn son's blessing. Sends him out to bring in some venison, cook him up like he will, cook him a venison stew like he likes, bring it to him. He'll eat the stew and then he'll bless him. Well, Rebekah hears this and she tells Isaac, "Quick, go kill a goat. I'll cook it and put on some hairy garments so that he'll think that you're Esau, and go up there and fool your father, who can't see very well now, and we will, he will give his blessing to you instead of Esau." And so he tricks his father. And so in down in verse 30, let's start in 22. Let's go back to 22. It says, "Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.'" Because he had these goat hair gloves on, I guess. He said he did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him. So he received the blessing. Verse 30, after Isaac finished blessing him and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. Then he said to him, "My father, sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." His father Isaac asked him, "Who are you?" "I am your son," he answered, "your firstborn Esau." Isaac trembled violently and said, Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed." And so here we have Esau suddenly realizing that Jacob has stolen his blessing. So verse 38, Esau says to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud. His father Isaac answered him, "Your dwelling will be away from the earth's richness, away from the dew of heaven. You will live by the sword and you will serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke from off your neck." Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." Okay, so we'll pick up with him in just a minute. I want to take a little detour and talk about Esau. So Esau here has lost his blessing. He's lost his birthright and his blessing. And essentially, he's going to be serving his brother. Okay. Now, what those things really, they got carried out in the descendants of Jacob and Esau. And that's what we're going to see. God still blessed Esau from the beginning. Look over in Deuteronomy chapter 2. We're going to jump around a little bit here. In Deuteronomy chapter 2, Deuteronomy is a sermon Moses gave just before they entered the promised land, just before Moses died. And it says in chapter 2, verse 4, "Give the people these orders. You are about to pass through the territory of your brothers, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. They will be afraid of you, but be very careful. Do not provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land, not even enough to put your foot on. I have given Esau the hill country of Seir as his own." So God initially blessed Esau's descendants, the descendants of the brother of Israel, of Jacob. Okay, but now let's flip forward to 2 Samuel. Because remember it said that he would serve his brother? In 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 13, this is at the time of David, King David, where probably 1,000 years later, I haven't done the math, but it's at least 1,000 years later. And in Deuteronomy 2, verse 4, in 2 Samuel 8, 13, it says, "And David became famous after he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites." Now, who are the Edomites? The descendants of Edom, of Esau, in the Valley of Salt. "He put garrisons throughout Edom, and all the Edomites became subject to David. The Lord gave David victory wherever he went." So here we have the descendants of Jacob ruling over the descendants of Esau. Okay, 2 Kings chapter 8, we're now at least 500 years after David, and in the time of King Jehoram. 2 Kings 8, verse 20. "In the time of Jehoram, Edom rebelled against Judah and set up its own king. So Jehoram went to Zair with all his chariots. The Edomites surrounded them and his chariot commanders, but he rose up and broke through by day. His army, however, fled back home. To this day, Edom has been in rebellion against Judah." So the thing that happened here is that it's exactly what Isaac had said to Esau. He says, later on, you're going to throw off the yoke from your brother. And then, but it continues on in Psalms 137 says, "Remember, O Lord, what the Edomites did on the day Jerusalem fell." Let me put the context here. This is talking about after the conquest by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. So here we have one of the Psalms. It's either a prophecy or it's a Psalm that's written after Babylonian captivity. And what happened was the Edomites had sort of gloated over the capture of Israel. Okay, there's always been this rivalry all these years. And it says in verse 7, it says, "Remember, O Lord, what the Edomites did on the day Jerusalem fell to Nebuchadnezzar. Tear it down, they cried. Tear it down to its foundations." He says, like, remember God. Remember what they said about us. Obadiah chapter 1, verse 10 says, "Because of the violence against your brother Jacob," this is a prophecy against Edom, "because of the violence against your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame. You will be destroyed forever. On the day you stood aloof while strangers carried off his wealth," again talking about when Nebuchadnezzar conquered Israel, foreigners entered its gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. You should not look down on your brother in the day of his misfortune, nor rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their destruction, nor boast so much in the day of their trouble." You can actually read the whole book of Obadiah. It's just one chapter. And it's a prophecy against, basically against Edom, saying, okay, you were gloating over Israel, but your time's coming. And it did. In Malachi, last book of the Old Testament, chapter 1, says verse 2, says, "I have loved you, says the Lord, but you ask, how have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, the Lord says? Yet I have loved Jacob, but Esau I hated. And I have turned his mountains into a wasteland and left his inheritance to the desert jackals." Okay, so they've been, by this time, this is like 400 years before Jesus. Okay, this is the end of the Old Testament period. He had completely devastated the territory of Edom. So it says in verse 4, it says, "Edom may say, though we have been crushed, we will rebuild the ruins. But this is what the Lord Almighty says. They may build, but I will demolish. They will be called the wicked land, a people always under the wrath of the Lord." So Edom ended up provoking the wrath of the Lord. And so from the very beginning, when Isaac was giving the blessings to Esau and to Jacob, you can see that he was basically foreshadowing what was going to happen to his descendants. In the book of Romans, it talks about the fact that before either Jacob or Esau had done anything good or bad, God had said that the older will serve the younger. Okay, that it wasn't a matter of they had blown it, and so God said, "Okay, I'm going to set it up that way moving forward." But it was like God foreshadowed that was the way it was going to unfold. So, and then, you know, because this is really important for us to understand, because it talks about, you know, we know that, you know, we think about Father Abraham has many sons. I'm one of them, so are you. You know, those sons are reckoned through Jacob, not through Esau. And Romans tells us that it was, it's really not the physical descendants, but the spiritual descendants of Abraham. Because it's not even all the physical descendants. And I'll just read Luke 3:8. You can write it down, write down the reference. Jesus, speaking to some of the Israelites, says, "Produce fruit in keeping with repentance." And, excuse me, not Jesus. This is John the Baptist speaking to the Pharisees coming to him. He says, "Produce fruit in keeping with repentance. And do not begin to say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our father.' For I tell you that out of these stones God can raise up children to Abraham." It was not the physical descendants of Abraham that were receiving the promise. Obviously, Esau's descendants didn't receive the promise. Okay, Hebrews 12, verse 16 and 17. This is sort of the bottom line lesson for us out of Esau. It says, "See to it that no one is sexually immoral or is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. Afterwards, as you know, when he wanted to inherit his blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears." So, you know, do we ever sell something like our birthright for a bowl of soup? You know, do we, you know, the idea is, what is the great birthright that we as Christians have? You know, salvation, forgiveness of sins, promise to spend eternity with God in heaven. You know, would we sell our birthright, that birthright, for some pleasure, for some money, for some, you know, for something that we want now? You know, can we? Satan's all the time trying to sell us bowls of soup. He says, "Let me make a deal with you. I'll give you a bowl of soup. Just give me your birthright." You know, and that's what he's saying here. Let's see to it that we're not like Esau. Do you see where Esau and his descendants ended up? Okay. So, but this is an Old Testament survey, and we're back in Genesis 28. And I have to catch up. So in Genesis 28, you've heard of Jacob's ladder. Okay, in the NIV, it's Jacob's stairway. But it's a stairway to heaven. That he has a dream, and he envisions a stairway to heaven with the angels ascending and descending. And he says, "This must be the very house of God, and where I am." And God, again, repeated his promise to Jacob. So So then, so basically what we have here is that Jacob has stolen Esau's birthright. Isaac has died now. And basically what happens is that Rebecca warns Jacob to flee from Esau because she knows that Esau has said, I'm going to kill him. So what happens, so Jacob flees and he goes to their relative Laban and he meets this relative's two daughters and he wants to marry Rachel. And so he approaches Laban about it. Laban says, okay, you served me for 7 years and you can marry my daughter. So he serves him for 7 years. At the end of the 7 years, he gives him his firstborn daughter, which was not the one that Jacob had had in mind. He says, I served you for Rachel. Why did you give me Leah? You know, he says, well, it's not the custom here to give away, to give the second one in marriage before the first. You know, so imagine how you would feel. You know, you've just been given the wrong one in marriage, you know. So you're now married to this woman that you didn't. So he says, okay, serve me for another 7 years and I'll give you Rachel too. So, and he apparently he actually gave him Rachel too, and then he served him for 7 years and he had both of them, apparently. So at any rate, they, so Jacob marries Leah and Rachel. And then he says, at the end of the second 7 years, he's prepared to move on and make his own life. But Laban says, you know, I've noticed that God's been blessing me because of you. He says, I want to keep you here. What can I do to keep you here? So Jacob makes a deal with him. He says, okay, how about this? Any of the speckled, spotted, striped sheep and goats, they'll be mine. And any of them that are solid color will be yours. And that way you can tell that I haven't stolen anything of yours. If you find anything around my sheep that's not speckled or striped, it'll be considered stolen. Laban says, that sounds like a great deal. You stay here and take care of my sheep, and my, you know, you take care of my livestock, and anything that's striped or speckled you can have. It'll be yours. So that's his pay. Well, so Jacob, with some miraculous help from God, is able to control which sheep become speckled and striped, and he ends up with the stronger ones. He does this thing with peeling bark off of poplar branches and so forth, and basically, then, to make a long story short, Jacob ends up with all of Laban's wealth because all the strong sheep become speckled and striped, and so he has this vast wealth, and Laban's just sort of, you know, languishing. So Jacob notices that Laban isn't too favorably disposed to him anymore, you know, a number of years down the road, and so he says, okay, let me grab up my family, my livestock, and let's get out of here. So he takes off. And then Laban comes chasing after him, and it turns out Rachel had stolen something belonging to Laban, and Laban comes looking for it, never finds it, but they end up making a truce. So now, here is Jacob, this deceiver, this guy who basically swindled people left and right, that God has still blessed him. God has still blessed him, and that he's become very wealthy. And he's not blessed him because Jacob was so righteous. He's keeping his promise to Abraham, okay? Because Abraham was righteous. Jacob then begins to have his family. He has, starting in Genesis 29, in chapter 30, and then 35, he has 12 sons and a daughter, okay? Through Leah, he has Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, four of the tribes of Israel. Then through Bilhah, who is one of the servants, a concubine, I guess you would say. He has Dan and Naphtali. Through Zilpah, he has Gad and Asher. Through Leah, he has Issachar and Zebulun. And through Rachel, he has Joseph and Benjamin. So he has 12 sons. And he has a daughter named Dinah. Okay, so that's the 12 tribes, the 12 men are being the 12 tribes of Israel. Okay, So at any rate, so Jacob's got all this wealth. He's leaving Laban, and now he realizes Esau. Esau has also been blessed. Esau has become fairly wealthy and fairly powerful. And so he hears that Esau is approaching him with a band of 400 men. He thinks, oh no, he's going to take his revenge now. Here comes Esau. So he's terrified. And so the night before he approaches Esau, thinking he's getting ready to get killed after all this, God's blessed him all these different ways, he encounters an angel of God, and you hear, you have Jacob wrestling with this angel of God. In verse, and we're in Genesis 32 here. Genesis 32, verse 28. He wrestles with the angel and prevails over the angel. And that's an interesting thing to think about. Obviously, God had the power to have him, you know, for a man to wrestle with an angel is just not an ordinary thing. And for a man to out-wrestle an angel, there had to be some collusion on the other side, you know, that God allowed it, you know, and that the angel allowed it because, you know, let's just say that he didn't just wrestle with an angel. There's more to it than we really know. But in verse 28, it says, the man said, this is after the wrestling, the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel. Okay, so here's where the name Israel comes into the vocabulary. Because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel because it is because I saw God face to face and yet my life was spared. You know, here he talks about, you know, he wrestled with a man, but he says, I saw God face to face. I just refer to Hosea 12:3-5. There it talks about that he wrestled with an angel. Okay, so, you know, what is an angel? An angel is a messenger. That's what the word means, a messenger from God. You know, God is not a part of this creation, is he? Obviously, he created it. Okay, so if God wants to communicate with us and have something, somebody we can see, he has to create what I call a special effect. Right? So I believe what happened here was Jacob wrestled with a special effect that God created. And that, he was communicating through that special effect with God. And so at any rate, so he had this wrestling match with God. And, you know, we can speculate about why he did that. There's all kinds of theories about, you know, why is this introduced? Why are we told about this? Is it just so that we can know that his name was Israel? I think God's preparing him for something, you know, helping him to realize that he needs to honor God and that God's going to bless him. And so he did. He wrestled with God. But he approaches Esau, and Esau basically makes peace with him. He breaks, and before he approaches Esau, he breaks up into two companies of people because he figures if Esau destroys one of them, the other one will get away. And then he says, with the company he's with, he starts sending part of the company ahead with a bunch of gifts. And then sends another part of the company ahead with some more gifts, with some livestock to give to Esau, trying to appease him so when he gets there, he'll be in a good mood. And, you know, whether that worked or not, you know, when he got there, he was in a good mood, and they made peace. And so then in chapter 34, there's a fairly ugly incident that happens with one of Jacob's, with Jacob's daughter, Dinah. Some of the people in the area, the family or descendants of Shechem, the Hivite, they have a... basically, Shechem defiles Dinah. And so the brothers get very angry with him, and they trick them, and they end up killing off Shechem. And basically, making all the people in the surrounding area angry with the Israelites because they had done that. Even though there's some, you know, they had some justifiable reason, perhaps. So we have that in chapter 34. And then in chapter 35, God renews his promise to Jacob. And he tells him to build an altar. And in verse 9, after Jacob returned from Padan Aram, this is 35, chapter 35, verse 9. After Jacob returned from Padan Aram, I guess is the right way, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said, your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel. So he named him Israel. And God said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you, and kings will come from your body. The land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you, and I will give you this land and your descendants after you. Okay. So there we have God, again, repeating the promise to Isaac and to Jacob that he promised to Abraham and to Isaac. So we have, when at the time that Benjamin was born in chapter 35, Rachel died in childbirth. So he was, the son was named Benjamin. That was the 12th son. So then we have another kind of ugly incident with Reuben. in chapter 35, verse 22, while Israel was living in that region, Reuben went and slept with his father's concubine, Bilhah, and Israel heard of it. That's really, it just says that one sentence. All it says about it there. But in Genesis chapter 49, if you want to flip there, this is later on, the consequences of what Reuben had done. In 49 verse 3, this is Jacob blessing his sons, giving at his death. He says, "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power. Turbulent as the waters, you will no longer excel. For you went onto your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it." So he lost his rights as firstborn. And if you want to look on your own, in 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, speak to the fact that Reuben did not receive the rights of the firstborn because of that. And he was not listed in the genealogical record according to his birthright. So Judah basically became the rights of the firstborn. So there we have the life of basically the period of Isaac, Jacob, and Esau. And, you know, the important thing, the reason we're going through these things is to help us have a foundation for understanding the New Testament. Again, as we look at the, throughout the preaching in the book of Acts, and look at the reasoning in Paul's letters about why we do things, what it means when we do things, and even the evangelism of the book of Acts, it's based on the Old Testament. So hopefully, you know, some of the things we've talked about last week and this week are pivotal to understanding some of the things that we read about in Romans and Hebrews and in Acts. So hopefully this is helpful to us. Next week we're going to talk about one of my favorite parts of the book of Genesis, and that's we're going to talk about Joseph. We'll talk about basically how the people of Israel, the descendants of Israel, make their way into Egypt and through some pretty spectacular, remarkable times. And so if you want to read ahead, just continue on. We finished up in chapter 35, so you can read 36 through 50, the rest of the book of Genesis. That's what we'll talk about. But it'll be at 9 o'clock next week. So there will actually, you know, next week Richard will be back, and you'll have a regular sermon from Richard, you know, that we can all look forward to. But we'll have Bible class at 9 o'clock next week. So thank you very much.